Daybreak Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 20th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The first day of Kenya's opposition anti-government protest turned violent on Wednesday.
They sent officers in plain clothes to poor areas like Mathare, where they have shot people, Kibera, where they have shot people, and those people were shot in their living environment.
Mariama Diallo will report on the day's events from Nairobi. Zimbabwe's opposition turns to door-to-door campaigning. The Zimbabwe Supreme Court today hears the appeal of an independent candidate who has been denied from participating in the August 23 elections. Malawi faces another nationwide fuel shortage.
The problem became apparent on Sunday when motorists started to scramble for gasoline, though diesel still was readily available. Now both products have run out.
And Somalia's National Museum hosts its first post-war exhibit. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Three days of anti-government protests against tax hikes by the government kicked off yesterday, Wednesday, in Kenya. Mariama Diallo covered the protest and filed this report.
Protesters burned tires and battled with police in many places across the country on the first day of nationwide protests called by opposition leader Raila Odinga. Primary and secondary day schools were closed in the capital, Nairobi, and Mombasa. In Nairobi's Kibera district, Omondi Jaisian says he's ready to protest as long as it takes.
I'm protesting because the standards of living in this country have gone drastically up. They are going up each and every day. We don't need Duterte at that seat. He has already shown us he's a very stubborn man. He's not ready to listen to the people.
In the usually bustling central business district in downtown Nairobi, most businesses were closed. But a few people decided to open shop. Local resident Vikita Hirani works at Brand X Limited, a shop that sells men's clothing, including suits and shirts.
We thought the morning hours there would nothing be serious, so we just came to see what's happening around. But we've been open since almost 4 hours, and no customers, no work at all. Yeah, no movement of cars, no people.
Frederick, another resident who only gave his first name, drives a so-called matatu, a common mode of public transportation. He says usually he can fill his van quickly, but today he's been waiting for a while because there are no customers.
I've come to work today because I don't have money. Landlord is waiting for me. Children, I have a family. This car, it usually gets full with 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Now it is staying almost an hour.
Next to him, Wilson Yorogi urged Kenyan President William Ruto and opposition leader Odinga to negotiate.
They should call each other, talk, and come to a conclusion. They stop what they are doing because we are the ones who are affected.
The opposition group Azimio called for the protest in part because of tax hikes passed last month by the Ruto government. The rate hike has since been challenged in court. Vincent Kimosop, an economic policy and governance expert based in Nairobi, explains.
The Chief Justice yesterday has appointed a 3-judge bench to listen to this. So you can see clearly that if we leverage on the legal and institutional frameworks that facilitates us to address our grievances.
Javis Bigambo is a lawyer and governance specialist based in Nairobi. He says President Ruto should exercise prudence.
The president needs not play critical hardball with especially his opponents, Raila Odinga, because the opposition and with Raila Odinga, they're inviting the president to the table of chaos. The president should not take the bait. The president should also see how to separately handle the socioeconomic necessities that are the driving force of the present demonstrations, especially issues to do with the cost of living, which has been taken advantage of by the opposition, and they are now spiraling.
Kenyan Foreign Minister Alfred Mutua says the protests have been politically instigated and have been far from peaceful as the opposition have characterized them.
What we have witnessed are violent protests with those involved carrying all manner of crude weapons. We have seen goons destroy a highway with no police around. That is not a peaceful protest.
The protests are expected to continue Thursday. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Kenya, Martha Karua, Raila Odinga's running mate in last August elections, has accused Kenyan police of unjustified arrest and abductions of the opposition Azimio La Umoja One Kenya leaders and associates during Wednesday's anti-government protest. Kenyan authorities say over 300 people were arrested across the country and will be charged with looting, damage to property, arson, and assaulting law enforcement officers. Karua tells me that the police behavior demonstrates the Ruto government's despise for Kenya's poor. She denies Ruto's accusation that she and Odinga are trying to gain power through unconstitutional means.
There were demonstrations throughout the country, but there were more police out than citizens because the government has flooded areas they expected demonstrations with police. And unfortunately, this illegitimate government despises the poor. So they sent officers in plain clothes to poor areas like Mathare, where they have shot people, Kibera, where they have shot people. And those people were shot in their living environment, in the informal settlements where they live. If you contrast that with the upmarket estates where there's no presence of police officers, that's indication of the disdain they have of poor people.
Madam, in the first place, you said this illegitimate government, but there was an election. Why you call the government illegitimate?
Because we know that they didn't win. We received credible information from the whistleblower. We have asked them to let there be an audit of the 2022 elections pursuant to Article 88 of our Constitution. They refuse. They are curtailing on people's rights. That makes them illegitimate.
So the question I have, and I'm sure many other Kenyans, is that why the demonstrations? Why?
I don't think many Kenyans have that question. It's you who is asking as a correspondent. It is Kenyans who are coming out, and you have seen them coming out in large numbers, prompting the government to bring out the police because they don't want people to express their voice. People are oppressed by the rising cost of living without any mitigating measures to cushion them, the oppressive and punitive tax law, which polls showed people overwhelmingly rejected, but which with impunity, the Ruto-controlled parliament, not controlled by numbers, but controlled by inducements, showing contempt to the people's views. So it is Kenyans. These demonstrations now have gone organic.
Madam, what do you say to President Ruto? Because President Ruto says that you and your running mate, Mr. Odinga, you are trying to gain power through unconstitutional means.
Cost of living has nothing to do with gaining power. I don't know why he's becoming incoherent, because the issues today about cost of living, and even if one of the issues is about audit of 2022 elections, the audit is provided for by the Constitution. If the audit shows he stole elections, then it means he's not a legitimate president. And if it is found that we won, then we would be coming to power through legitimate means. We have not sought to use anything outside the Constitution. We have abided by all constitutional dictates.
Before I let you go, madam, I understand that this is a three-day protest, but I'm looking at a headline that said Mr. Odinga tells supporters to end protest.
Mr. Odinga hasn't. In fact, under his instructions, I have issued a statement just now, and I'm going to forward to you, telling protesters to rest and tomorrow to continue.
Madam, thank you so much again. Always a pleasure.
Karibu.
That was Honorable Martha Karua, Raila Odinga's running mate in the August 2022 presidential elections. She was speaking with us from Nairobi, Kenya. Fuel stations in Malawi's capital, Blantyre, are running on empty after a fresh nationwide fuel shortage this week. Long lines of motorists are waiting for hours, sometimes overnight, in hopes of fueling their vehicles, while public transport fares have doubled. Malawi's energy regulator says the country has depleted its fuel reserves, largely due to a lack of foreign currency. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The problem became apparent on Sunday when motorists started to scramble for gasoline, though diesel still was readily available. Now both products have run out. Long lines, some as long as a kilometer from a pump station, are common, attracting a lot of speculation from motorists like Laban Chirwa.
He
says it seems there are plans to hike the prices of fuel, so some filling stations are deliberately holding the fuel to make huge profits from the old stock. But the government has rejected the speculation. This is the first time since March the fuel supply situation has reached critical levels. The fuel scarcity has forced operators of public transportation vehicles to almost double their fares. However, the operators say despite the increase in fares, they are not making any profits because they are spending a day or two lining up for fuel without doing any business. Kalisto Kambani runs a minibus business in Blanta. He says many people here rely on minibuses, so this problem has affected us a lot because even our families survive because of this business, and the fuel scarcity is a big blow to us. Malawi has been facing recurring fuel shortages since August of last year, largely because the country lacks enough foreign currency. The Reserve Bank of Malawi said in June that the government's foreign exchange reserves were not enough to last a month. Henry Kachaje is the chief executive officer for the Malawi Energy Regulatory Authority. He told reporters Tuesday that Malawi cannot keep up with rising international prices for petroleum products.
Previously, the country used to require an average of about $300 million worth of product. But because when prices on the international market rose, then it came to a level where, as a country, we needed almost $600 million. Unfortunately, our export base did not double as the import bill doubled.
Kachaje said the energy regulator is working with the fuel suppliers to minimize the shortages.
One way is to engage suppliers that are willing to give product to Malawi in Malawi Kwacha, so that we use that as a measure to supply to the main market on a daily basis, while we allow our national importer, the National Oil Company of Malawi, to focus on restocking the strategic reserves.
Kachaje said if all works according to plan, the fuel strategic reserve in Malawi will be restocked by the end of August. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 20th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 256 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. Once again, the WhatsApp number is +1 202 258 3076. Again, +1 202 258 3076. And we thank you for 60 years of support. Zimbabwe's main opposition, the Citizens Coalition for Change, has turned to door-to-door campaigning ahead of next month's election, saying police are turning down its applications for public rallies. The police acknowledged refusing to authorize a number of opposition rallies, but said they are also turning down requests from the ruling party. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Members of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, stamp door-to-door for their leader, Nelson Chamisa, in Harare suburb. They tell voter Tapiwa Mashamba where his polling station will be on election day, August 23. He says their meeting was important.
I didn't know my polling station, plus I didn't know how to check my polling station in the phone. They told me and it was very important. Now I know how to check my polling station. I can also tell someone how to check their polling station.
CCC members say they started going door to door after police refused to approve most of their rallies. One of the campaigners is Denford Gadziore, who is seeking re-election as a Harare city councillor. He says the new strategy is actually yielding better results than rallies that require police clearance, which party members say is hard to come by.
You need to get approval from the police if you are more than 15. And currently we are doing this program, we are 14 people. We are engaging voters in the group of 3333, going into each and every street, house by house, person to person. So it's very effective, more than a rally.
Police refute accusations they are blocking CCC rallies. They say the CCC has applied for 347 rallies since January, and fewer than 50 have been turned down for security concerns or other reasons. Police say the ruling ZANU-PF party has asked for permission to hold about 1,400 rallies, and more than 85 have been turned down.
We are maintaining registers, including for those turned down, for those approved. So we would want people who raise allegations to justify, not to speak because they just want to justify whatever they failed to do, but to have facts, and facts where if they are alleging something against the police, facts which can be proven.
While the opposition party tests the new door-to-door campaign strategy, police are asking parties to tell the truth so the electoral process earns the credibility it deserves. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
The independent candidate in Zimbabwe's August 23 elections says the government is frustrating his candidacy because it knows he will defeat President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Savior Kasukuweri says it is essential for Zimbabwe to hold free and fair elections so that the people can freely express their will. This comes as the Zimbabwe Supreme Court is set to rule today, Thursday, on Kasukuweri's appeal against the High Court's decision to disqualify him on the grounds that he had been out of the country for over 18 months. Kasukuweri tells me that he hopes that the court will grant his appeal.
We expect that our teams who are in the courts will brief us after the ruling on exactly what the court would have said. They will make the arguments, and our team will also respond to those arguments. And I'm sure the court will then agree on when the matter will then be dealt with soon.
The lower court ruling said that they were disqualifying you because you had not been in the country for 18 months.
Well, that position is what we contested, and we went to the Supreme Court. We appealed to the Supreme Court, which basically nullified the position of the lower court. The Supreme Court on Tuesday sat down with our representative and the other litigants, and they agreed on discussing and arguing on the agency tomorrow. And thereafter, then the court will then set a date for the argument based on the issues, basically because we have objected and we have appealed to the higher court, saying that we think the judge misdirected himself in the judgment that he made.
Mr. Kasuku Were, how do you view the elections, the August elections coming up? How important do you think they are for Zimbabwe?
These elections are very, very critical. They should, one, mark Zimbabwe's emergence out of the coup. In other words, we must secure the coup, allow free and fair elections to be held so that the will of the people can be expressed. It's essential as we seek to bring back our country into the Committee of Nations for us to conduct elections with very minimal disputes so that we can restore and start to see our country move forward.
Why do you think the Elections Commission is concerned about you registering? I mean,
the incumbent president is scared. He knows I'll defeat him. And so he's running scared and he's pulling all stops to try and delay my campaigns as well as to try and frustrate my candidature. He knows what awaits him in terms of the support base and that he'll be defeated.
Thank you so much, sir. A pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Saviour Kasuku Were is the independent candidate in Zimbabwe's August 23 elections. Somalia's Rebuilt National Museum is, from July 15, hosting its first show after more than three decades of damaging war and conflict. The 90-year-old museum is holding an international exhibit for 18 artists. Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu.
Somalia's National Museum finished rebuilding in 2020 after decades of war, looting and neglect, but the COVID-19 pandemic postponed plans for a first show until now. The museum is first exhibit since closing with the outbreak of civil war in 1991, opened July 15 with paintings, drawings, photographs and sculptures by 18 artists from Somalia and abroad. Foreign artists, including those from Italy, Mexico and Sweden, exhibited their works remotely due to logistics and security concerns. For many Somalis like 24-year-old Sumayo Abdi, this was their first time visiting their national museum.
Everyone who has come to this exhibition is very happy because it represents our heritage and the legacy of our mothers and grandparents.
Museum Director Osman Gedo oversaw the restoration of the museum, founded in 1933, and says they are ready to return it to its former glory.
The museum has begun its work, and the next step will be to place cultural objects in the museum. As the museum contains a four-story building, it currently operates on the ground floor and the second floor. The remaining two stories of the building are empty. The remaining two stories should be filled to the brim with cultural objects as they represent Somali culture and history.
Head of the Somali National Academy of Culture, Abdul Qadir Hussein, noticed many objects were looted during decades of civil war.
Prior to the country's civil war, the museum was stocked with 4,000 cultural heritage items, and all 4,000 items were taken. I believe a few were destroyed and very few others were exported from the country. But the rest, we believe, are stored in homes for personal use. We expect people to return those items, even if just a history book. Bring it back to the museum.
The theme of the museum's first exhibit is called Hoy, which means home in Somali. Somali artist Abdinasir Abdul Qadir's work, which included both paintings and sculpture, is part of the exhibit.
I am pleased to be a part of the first international art exhibition held in Mogadishu that brings together various artists from around the world. And the theme is about home. What does home mean to you? What role does it play in your life? And so on.
Somalia's Minister of Education and Culture, Farah Sheikh Abdul Qadir, called this first exhibit in decades a significant milestone and a sign of improved security and stability.
The opening of this art exhibition in the National Museum called Hoy is proof that we have overcome the days of anarchy, assassinations and destruction.
The art exhibit will continue at the Somalia National Museum for 6 months. Hamish Noor, For VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that's it for this Thursday, July 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, saying,